joined with Our Saviors and is called the Living Faith Church. Reverend Dr. Williams' contributions to the spiritual community and to the broader community are enormous. And joining us today with an equally profound community contribution story in her own right is Joni Williams, Warren's wife, who has served as 37 years as a nurse, both at other places and at Atonement eventually, and whose volunteer activities throughout southeastern Wisconsin are innumerable. Welcome to both of you, and thanks so much for coming today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Linda. Thank you.
I'm humbled by this.
I'm going to start with you, Warren, for a little bit before we bring Joni into the conversation. How did you come to ministry? As a little boy, did you think you were going to be a minister? And was your family, what was your family like? Is it something they encouraged?
As a very little boy, I kind of thought about being in ministry. Although then I went through a while where I got involved in a place in my hometown, which at that point was Osseo, Minnesota, called the Lord's Barn, which was a Christian coffee house. This was the early 70s. Things like that were very popular then. And I had a bunch of friends who were very involved in this place. We were involved in our church youth group. And when I was about 15, I started thinking I wanted to be a pastor. And I talked to some of my friends thinking they would want to do that too, and none of them did. I did not go on a direct route to that. I wasn't all that happy in high school, so I couldn't imagine going to 8 years of school after high school. So I did some other things, managed a 7-Eleven, worked in a Bible camp, worked for a finance company, but eventually the road led back to this is what I was supposed to be doing. So I did things for a few years, other things, but the ministry, I think, is where I felt called and still feel called to be.
Was your family happy about that or neutral?
Yeah, I think so. That's good. I came from a very faithful Lutheran family, and I think they've been pleased with me being in the ministry.
So how old were you when you went in the seminary?
I was probably 27 when I went in the seminary.
Okay. And how many years was it that you were in?
Well, for the Lutheran Church, the LCA back then, now the ELCA, you usually have 4 years of seminary. It's 2 years and then a year of internship and then a concluding year in the seminary. That's not an uncommon mistake.
It's
Freudian.
A slip of the tongue, yes. And those years were a lot like college, do you think, or what would you compare them to?
Well, sure, they're like college. It's a studying. I think the first year of seminary, at least in the Lutheran seminary, they tend to force you to tear apart your beliefs a little bit and examine your beliefs. You do become, at the end of it, a teacher of the Lutheran Church, and they want you teaching more or less the things that they believe as opposed to some of the more popular religious beliefs that are out there, cultural beliefs.
It's good to hear that they make you tear apart to really delve into what you believe so that you know that it's right for you, I guess.
And I think a huge number of people drop out of seminary in the first year because it isn't what they thought it was going to be.
Right. Yeah. Right. So from the seminary, did you graduate and then do your internship, or you did the internship and then went to seminary?
No, you do 2 years and then a year of internship and then a final year.
Okay.
I did my internship in Chicago at Holy Family Lutheran Church in Cabrini Green, which was an amazing and wonderful experience. It was a place where there was a lot of gang violence, but at the same time there was some wonderful community. People had lived there for decades, and because I was in a church that had for decades been very much involved in the community and was understood as being important to the community. Uh-huh. I never felt particularly in danger there. Mm-hmm.
So it was a very low-income group of people.
Very low-income.
And there were a number of gangs.
There were probably three main gangs and another one also that, four, but kind of three main gangs that ruled the roost. So there was, I didn't live within Cabrini-Green. I lived right next to it. And there were times at night where you could hear a great deal of gun violence going on, a lot of shooting.
What kind of insight did that give you for the rest of your life, not only ministry, but what did you learn from that internship at Cabrini-Green?
Oh, I suppose all sorts of things. People are people. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that, you know, that was primarily an African American community. Growing up in North Dakota and Minnesota, I had huge exposure to an African American community, and so I felt very blessed to be a part of that. That I certainly learned what I said, that there is a certain protection, if you will, if you're understood to be working for the good in a community, and then certainly I learned to have an appreciation for the poor, an understanding that the poor are not, at least substantially, responsible for their poverty. I mean, everybody makes choices, and sometimes we make wrong choices. But all of us make wrong choices. Mm-hmm. And people who are living long-term in poverty, often it's more than their choices that make them poor. Mm-hmm. It's a huge number of other factors, and it's complicated. And my supervisor is a fellow named Charles Infelt, who is now, by the way, the mayor of Waverly, Iowa. But he was teaching a class at the Seminary Consortium for Urban Pastoral Education, as a seminary class for people who were interested in urban ministry. And I was his TA that year. That was just part of my job. And so I would attend the classes, and not that I was any more equipped to grade papers than the other people sitting in the class, but nonetheless, that was my job. So I would grade papers, and there was this one fellow, nice guy, but he was he had written in one of his papers something to the effect of, God must really not care about the people who are poor, because if God did care, they would then be rich. Well, I mean, that didn't strike me as particularly great theology.
Right.
So I made a comment, and I did mark his paper down maybe to like a C or something. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the semester, I was sitting down with Chuck, and we were going over this huge box of papers so that people could get their papers back. And I did kind of flag that one and say, this is something. And he had a red pen, and in a letter that was probably almost the size of the 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, he wrote a big F on it, and he said, this guy can't be in this program any longer.
Wow.
This is not acceptable.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, that I think that's a learning, certainly, there's certainly a large scriptural preference throughout Scripture for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I would believe that the kingdom of God, as Jesus envisioned it, had something to do with restoring community and fighting poverty.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I know you and Joni have worked so hard for social justice issues and for the poor and for hunger. And the story you told reminded me of people thinking that, you know, the God wants the Packers to win or something.
Well, being from Minnesota, I'm pretty sure God does want the Packers to win, unless he wants the Vikings to win, or she wants. I'm not quite sure which.
Well, at this point, I'd like to bring you, Joni, into this discussion. Joni's this amazing person who goes all over the place, quietly doing volunteer deeds that are just amazing. She drives homeless men up to medical appointments, sometimes in Milwaukee, or court appointments, or all kinds of things, and she is that's not really known a lot, except you get a lot of calls from people asking you to help. So tell our listeners how you came to the mission of nursing and when you joined Atonement as the nurse. And
okay, well, I have to go back a ways. I became a nurse in 1981 is when I graduated from St. Luke's School of Nursing in Racine. And I started out as a cardiac nurse, and later I became an endoscopy nurse, where we torture people with scopes. and then I was a hospice nurse, which was is one of my, I'm still in my heart, I feel I have a hospice heart.
Oh, yes.
I very much am concerned about the quality of care for people at the end of life. That was one of the best places I ever worked was a hospice. I worked for Hospice Alliance here in Kenosha, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I attended Marquette University, had a program on parish nurse preparation. And because I'm married to a pastor, I was thinking this would be a really good thing for me to do, because we could work as a team,
mm-hmm.
Me being the nurse, him the pastor. And so I completed that program in 1996 and became the first-year volunteer for 1 year at Atonement Church, which was Atonement back then. And after a year, the church council agreed to pay me. And so I gradually increased the hours of work that I did there, and, uh-huh. and then had to decrease what I did outside my other job as a nurse, because we have more than one job. And then primarily just became the parish nurse. I am still the parish nurse, although I don't get paid anymore. I volunteer. And
So are you retiring at the same time Warren is?
You know what?
Because you're volunteering.
I'm never going to retire.
Okay.
But you'll probably not be serving as the parish nurse.
I'm not going to be the parish nurse. No, I will not. But I will do. I am still a registered nurse, and mm-hmm. I am very passionate about taking care of the people who are put in my path, and that I want to continue to help. And since I keep my nursing license, I can practice, by the standards of care that I live by.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will continue to do what I can to help people who need access to health care,
mm-hmm.
to get that care and to advocate for them.
And you're very much like word of mouth. People just know about you, and if they see somebody in distress for anything, they say, oh, call Joni Williams. That's about how it works.
It started out, didn't start that way, but gradually,
mm-hmm.
The word is out there. I guess I shouldn't say this because it's not very nice, but like I'm a woman of the streets.
No, I don't think I'd say it. She's actually referred to more often as the angel of Racine.
Yes.
I mean, she's gone through several iterations of career. She was a wonderful hospice nurse for a long time and mm-hmm. helped so many people transition between life and death.
Yes.
She has been a marvelous parish nurse, and much of her work in the Atonement, then now Living Faith congregation, was doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of people who passed away, and you helped those people in that time and their families, and then I'm telling your story, but then Joni's parents lived with us for 13 years, and her father lived to be almost 100, and her mother a bit over 100.
Wow.
But the last few years were years where they needed substantial care, so she pared back her time at the church and still was working as parish nurse, often more in a real consulting role, but took care of her parents. But then it's in this post taking care of her parents that she really got involved with the homeless. And I'm gonna blow her horn because she won't, but she really is referred to as an angel out there in the streets. I know that she's shaking her head. You can't see that on radio, and she doesn't like it. She is And don't tell her I said this because it'll go to her head. She is kind of a hero for me in a way.
She's a hero for me too.
What she does is amazing. Mm-hmm. I think she doesn't pay enough attention, perhaps to her own safety sometimes, and take care of herself enough.
Yeah.
But she is okay. She's amazing.
All right.
I would just like to break in there because just as Warren said, when he was in Cabrini Green amongst all these gangs and this violence, he felt protected. Now, this may be a really naive way to think about things, but I feel very protected when I'm out doing what I do in the inner cities and different times of day and night. And I like feeling safe because I really believe that if something happened to me, if I were harmed, that at least I was doing something that I felt so passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really do. After my parents died, I thought, well, now what am I going to do? Because my whole life, those last few years with them, just revolved around their care 24/7. You know, two very, very elderly people who needed lots of care. But that's when I began working with homeless people who are experiencing homelessness. I started out with the hospitality center with a young man who I was told needed colostomy supplies. And that began a long journey with him. And eventually other people knew about me and they started contacting me. And that's sort of how my my reputation went out.
And we worked. Warren was head of the host shelter and you were a huge, Joni, volunteer there.
And she was the primary creator of the organization that got host.
And the county graciously funded that for 6 months in the winter of 2016 to 17. But Warren was the board president, Joni a volunteer. I volunteered there. But I have to just add to Warren's praise is that those guys said, Joni is like a mother to me. So many of them, like a mother to me. And, you know, what more of a model could you have been? So you've moved on, Warren, and you're on the HALO board. I don't mean moved on, but that was a temporary shelter. That was a six-month shelter.
Right.
And so
5 months?
No, I think it was
November through January, March, February, March, whatever that is.
Yeah. Whatever it is. But anyway, so now you're on the HALO board. So what are you seeing about the whole homeless issue and what HALO is trying to do?
Okay. I would quickly add that Linda was also a major force, not only on the board of Segway Host, but in its operation in many ways, including keeping a volunteer force going. Mm. And that was no little task.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know how many hundreds of phone calls she made to make that happen.
And can I add that her husband, Linda's husband, Stan, was one of the best volunteers because he took the overnight shift that nobody else wanted.
Yes, we had a shift that was, I think, midnight to 7. And I'd call people, and we had some people who would do that, but not so many, and he'd say, I'll go in. So
I am on the HALO board. I think that, you know, homelessness in Racine, you know, obviously continues. HALO is packed to the gills, and it certainly needs a great deal of support from people in the community. I think that the funders basically decided that we didn't need two shelters. We would have continued, but HALO stepped up, and it has done a great job this winter with really two kinds of populations. Those who are more chronically homeless, often experiencing mental illness or addiction issues. But HALO stepped up and said, we're going to take these people and we're going to work with them. It's not an easy task because they're also working with a less chronic population of homeless folks who sometimes have their own issues, sometimes are recovering from alcoholism, and then to have people who are actively using, that's not easy for them. It's not entirely fair, but it's Wisconsin and it's winter, and to allow people to sleep outside just isn't a good thing.
And for a while, HALO wasn't as open to taking people. Like, we took at Host, many of the people we took at Host, they might have been drinking, they might have been using, but as long as their behavior was controlled and they couldn't bring alcohol or drugs in there. So that's a very different right. population than people right. who maybe, or sometimes it's a different population than people who lose their jobs or, mm-hmm. you know, are suddenly mm-hmm. homeless.
So, and I think we had a role, I think, in moving the community back to mm-hmm. moving Halo and back to a more holistic caring for the homeless.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's
and
awesome.
I remain also very. I'm not on a board, but I am very supportive of Halo and the Hope Center, and the other agencies within our community that work with people who are experiencing homelessness or are at risk for homelessness. And my role is mostly as a nurse, helping the ones who have more significant health problems and getting them to doctors and advocating while I'm there, but also working with and whatever the need is, whether it's food or clothing or you know, legal issues. I do what I can and learning every step of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to ask Warren you about the discussion of transition here at Living Faith. Why did you decide to retire at this point in your life, and what led you to that decision? And when do you officially retire?
All right, I officially retire on Sunday, April 15th.
Okay.
The decision to do that really came about because of our coming together, Atonement's joining forces, consolidating with our Savior's Lutheran Church. When we did that, we became a new entity, and according to our church polity, our associate, Denise Mbise, and I needed new calls. It was recommended by our synod, our local adjudicatory body, that what would be good would be a 2-year term call for both of us, giving the congregation time to do a study and decide what direction they would want to go. I realized at the time they suggested a 2-year term call that I would be about 62 at the time of the end of that call. And so decided that this was probably a time that was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And I feel very strongly still that is the case. I don't think I'm done with ministry. I think I'm done probably with long-term, full-time pastoral ministry. But I believe that I will likely do a variety of things within the community. I continue to serve on the Halo board. I also serve on the Hope Center board, which I would put a shout out about them as well, because that's also a wonderful ministry that works on getting people housed and does street outreach. They go out at least 3 nights a week and meet the homeless where they are, and with a little bit of food and blankets and mm-hmm. water and whatnot. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm sure I'll be doing within the community funerals and filling in for pastors who are on vacation or other churches that are in transition is likely farther down. But
so the synod isn't asking you to kind of keep a low profile after your retirement because you're staying in the community, which often isn't the case.
Well, that's an interesting question. There's a requirement that. And it's I think a wise requirement that says we need to step away from the congregation that we're serving.
Okay. Does that mean even leave the congregation?
Yes, we. Okay. And this is really hard for Joni in particular. Yeah. She has been a part of this congregation her whole life, except for her years in Japan, and you know, her grandparents joined in the early 1920s, I think. So this is a difficult transition, but. It's important so that a new pastor coming in will feel empowered to make their own decisions, and even if you would, you know, covenant to say I'm going to keep my nose out of things. I won't take funerals. I won't take weddings, which I have to do. I can't serve the people of my current congregation. I have to leave that for the new pastor, whoever that person is. But
and you're not on that search committee, or
I'm not on that search committee. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be backing away even from our food pantry, which I dearly love.
Do you have to back away too, Joni, from that?
I suppose I'm supposed to. I'm not much of a rule follower, but I guess.
Well, there isn't quite the level of rule for that. You wouldn't have to leave, but I'm hoping you'll come worship with me wherever I am.
I'm conflicted, but I also mm-hmm. have to. I have to. What shall I say? I need to. I do. I'm already backing off. Mm-hmm. I have, because it's a grieving. For me, it's a right. It's grieving, and if I don't understand about grieving, after working as a hospice nurse, then I didn't learn very much. But I've already done what you called anticipatory grieving, and in fact, this last Sunday I had a meltdown at church. Aww. It was the music, of course. Uh-huh. The choir was singing a beautiful piece that triggered all the emotions, and it just mm-hmm. suddenly dawned on me. But you know what? I will. I'm strong. I will. Mm-hmm. I will survive this. I will have my ups and downs, but I will find a place. And I love the community mm-hmm. Of Racine, and I will continue to do what I do.
Yeah. And Warren, this was actually a question on it I was going to ask mm-hmm. both of you. So how about you? Are you already feeling a grieving process? And you've said how you might work to adjust when you do retire.
Yeah, you know, it's becoming real.
Uh-huh.
Made the decision 2 years ago. I was kind of like, well, okay, that makes sense. And I announced it 6 months ago or so that my congregation would have an opportunity to, because they're doing a study, I wanted them to take that study very seriously, that it wasn't going to be that Warren is going to be coming anyway, so why really pay much attention to this, that Warren isn't going to be here, mm-hmm. so we need to pay attention to this. And have become, over those 6 months, something more of a lame duck. The questions aren't always going to me anymore,
right.
and that's fine, that's good. But now, in the last couple of weeks, I'm starting to grieve more, and I'm certainly sensing more grief, hearing more grieving from people in the congregation. You know, whether it's, you know, someone coming up and just, you know, passing me and laying a hand on my shoulder, or saying, you know, there's just 4 weeks left. But we, as Joni said, we love the Racine community. We have at least no immediate plans to leave it. And we anticipate that we will still see a lot of members in our worshiping community and maintain those relationships. Joni's been there all her life, and I've been there 31 years, and you're not going
right.
to stop those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But there does need to be some separation created. Mm-hmm.
In ministry, Warren, what are the things that you most enjoy about ministry? What's your personal mission maybe in that? And then also, there are some things that you probably don't like as much as other things.
Okay. Well, there are some things that I'm really pleased about. We started a satellite church. It was Atonement West. Now it's Living Faith West. That's now out in Sturtevant. It's never grown. That's something I'm not happy about. It's never uh-huh. grown as much as we'd hoped, but it is a wonderful and vital community. It had a little bit of an unintended consequence of stripping some of the vitality out of the older community of Atonement, now Living Faith. But it's a great thing. I'm very pleased about the consolidation with our Saviors to create Living Faith. The our Saviors people coming over have brought a great, even though they were small and struggling, the people who remained were people who were committed to their faith and committed to their community, and they brought over a certain vitality, a certain love of social justice that maybe was a little lacking in Atonement. Not that Atonement hasn't done some great things. I'm very pleased that we do the Faith Works food pantry. We have, it's a unique pantry, maybe not so unique, but it was created out of a Bible study by Pastor Steve Wolfile led. And the goal was to, what would Jesus do if Jesus were leading a food pantry? Would he be really concerned if someone wanted an extra can of pork and beans? He might just say, okay, go ahead, take that. And we're not always good, but we have a poster, a couple of them, down in the pantry that shows kind of this composite picture of Jesus that has all sorts of faces that make up the face of Jesus. And it says, we serve only one guest. And that's what we believe. You know, I try and say that before pantries on a regular basis, that, you know, we're going to treat everybody like we treat Jesus. Again, we don't do that so very well all the time. But we became very quickly the largest pantry in the city of Racine. And it's a place where that does more than feed people. It's a place that creates community. And that's very important. We have a meal site on Sunday night, and I'm very pleased that we host that and feed hungry people. I would also say, I don't know if I'm proud of it, but it, in a sense, because it just happened, but it is unique. I've done probably well in excess of 600 funerals, and that has given me an opportunity to, in the face of death, on lots and lots of occasions, to stand up and say that death is not the final word. And I believe that, and it's been an honor. The role of pastor is a privileged position. You get to stand with people in their moments of joy. I mean, how many times have I walked into a hospital room when a baby's been born and been able to, you know, hold this little tiny package and you know, offer a prayer of blessing and be a part of that? And how many families do you get to be a part of as they're starting and promising love to each other? Unfortunately, they don't always last, but also then to be at the hospital bed, to be with them when life is ending. And that's a very sacred place too. Joni always talked about that in hospice, that it's like a birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, birth is sacred, but death is sacred. Well, we believe it's birth to new life, and so to be there and to hear people's final words and to be with families, that's privileged. And so I'm really pleased to have been able to do that. You know, if there's one big thing that I would have loved to have seen happen differently, it would have been to see Atonement, Living Faith, you know, grow in numbers instead of shrink as it's done over the years. That is not something, you know, I feel too guilty about. We went through decades of trying to figure out why is the church shrinking, and it was shrinking for the most part across the board. There are a few places that have succeeded tremendously, but often that's because the church was consolidating, in essence, people going to the places where there was success. But in fact, you know, in the mid-70s, about 80% of people worshiped on a Sunday. Now 20% do.
Right.
We've got the structure for the 80%. And right. So it's very painful for churches.
I just want to throw in that, you know, recent statistics, church going in general is way down. And
right.
The biggest group is the nons.
Is the nons. That's right.
No, the nons. N-O-N-S is what we're saying.
Nons.
Oh, nons.
Nons. N-O-N is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is that was the, if you ask people to identify, the nons were the biggest group,
right.
Not church going.
Right.
So it's not your church.
Oh, yeah.
Most churches.
I know. Like I say, we went through the 80s and into the early 90s with a lot of blaming. And, you know, if we had a new pastor, a new youth director, a better choir director, a better piano player, you know, this would fix it. And nothing fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hopeful for the church that there will be a new church emerging. I think that it'll be focused more on community.
Yes, and spirituality as opposed to so much dogma. And I think that's what young people move away from is the dogma.
Well, that's what I find with when I work with my, I call my guys. I work with women too. Don't get me wrong, but most of
it's
the
mostly
people
guys.
That are,
yeah,
they're guys. Is their the their belief in God that they tell me. I always get this. Oh, don't worry, Joni. God's got my back. God's got my back. And I marvel at. When it seems like there's nothing, but you know what? They don't have anything to rely on except God. We have a bank account. We have our families that we haven't burned bridges with, hopefully, and so on. So so I learn a lot.
I tell another quick story. When we got involved with Host, when Joni was asked to create it, it started out with the hospitality center no longer being able to accept overnight guests, which they were doing during the winter months. Joni had a little demonstration just out in front of the hospitality center, St. Luke's Episcopal, to say that, we need to pay attention to this. And I was heading down there. She was already there, and I got a call saying one of the homeless guys that she works with, that we work with, had been beat up, and he needs to go to the emergency room. So I diverted and went over and found him, and I found actually three homeless guys, and they didn't want to go to the emergency room. They wanted to go. but could you buy us a hamburger? So we went over to McDonald's, and we were talking and eating, whatever we were eating over there. And one of them said, "Why do you care about us? Because we're just a bunch of drunks." But then they started talking about they were people of faith, and they wanted to pray. And they didn't just want me to pray for them, although I think the fact that I was a pastor enabled that. But they wanted to pray. And so we had a little prayer meeting on an October morning, a couple of years ago over at McDonald's. And these are homeless people who some people, almost feel have very little value. And in fact, these are God's children.
That's such a perfect ending. We're closing kind of quickly, but I wonder if you could each take a minute or so to talk about what you would like our listeners to know, and maybe touch a little bit on some of these social issues that we didn't have near enough time to talk about, but medical and hunger and poverty, and it's a lot to ask, but just whatever you'd like the community to know, how they can maybe be an impact.
Well, I think, in my early ministry, I preached God's love and salvation, and thinking of it really, what happens when you die? I think what has happened in my thinking in more recent years is an understanding that salvation, yes, happens later when you die, but it's really to begin now. The kingdom of God is to begin now. And I think that we are called, particularly people of faith, but all people, if we to understand that we are a community together. And so if there are people who are suffering from racial injustice, then we all suffer, even if we're not suffering it from ourselves. If there are people out there who are hungry, then we're all suffering. The community suffers. If there are people there who don't have a job, we're all suffering. The community is weaker for it, and we're weaker.
Yep.
And so that would be the one thing that I would, say is that we need to understand that we're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And the greater, the more that we can share community, that we can understand that we're in this together, share our resources, the better off we'll all be.
That's beautifully said, Warren. Thank you very much. And Joni?
Well, I agree with everything he just said. And I also want, the community that is beloved, it's a beloved community, and everyone in it is our brother, our sister.
Yes.
And I believe that my role, my purpose, is to love them. I don't care what they've done. I don't care. I mean, I care that they're suffering. I want to assuage their suffering as much as I am able, And I feel just so blessed that they trust me to walk with them. As I'm not, it's a mutuality.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I bless them, but they bless me. Yeah, I love them.
That's true.
To our listeners, you can see why these two were winners of a humanitarian award, because they really live what they speak. So I'm so happy to have had you here. For our listeners, music, we didn't get much chance to talk about that, but music has been a really important part of Warren's activism in his church and in this community. So he's going to close with a song that means a lot to him. He wrote it. It's called Speak, Lord. But before he does, I just want to end with this quote by the amazing Jim Henson of Muppets fame. He wrote the following. When I was young, my ambition was to be one of the people who made a difference in this world. My hope still is to leave the world a little bit better for my having been here. It's a wonderful life, and I love it. So today, I just want to thank Reverend Dr. Warren Williams and Joni Williams for your many years of devotion to Atonement Lutheran and to this community, and now to Living Faith, and for making this world a little bit better for having been there. So for that, and for joining us today, I thank you, and I thank our listeners, too. And to close out, Warren is going to end with his beautiful song, which is called, I believe, Speak, Lord.
Speak, Lord. Thank you. That was very kind, Linda. Speak, Lord, I will listen. Speak, Lord, and I will do. My hands are your hands, my feet your feet. My heart will love the world with you. When I am blind, open my eyes. Love again. Speak, Lord, and I will listen. Speak, Lord, and I will do. My hands are your hands, my feet your feet. My heart will love where there is pain, let me bring healing. Where there is hate, let me sow love. Where there is fear, a gentle hand. Where there are tears, there let me stand. Lord, I will do. My hands are your hands, my feet your feet. My heart will love the world with you. And when the day fades into shadows, and where hope is all but gone, there let me bring your gift of life with gentle words that speak your light. Speak, Lord, and I will listen.